our Director of Religious Education, Karen Lapidus, our Music Director, Hal Walker, and two of our musical groups, the Golden Tones Junior Choir and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Tone Chimers, who have prepared some wonderful music for us today. I'd like to let you know that we're celebrating our annual flower ceremony this morning, and so if you did not bring a flower with you to church, we have extras available for you, and you can take a moment to go get one from one of the greeters, so as we gather our flowers during our opening hymn, you'll be able to participate. They also have index cards, and we hope that each person will have one of those as well. May this flame burn and remind each of us that we are a blessing to the world, that we have goodness and love to offer. May it be so. When my daughter, at the age of 18, came home to nervously announce to us that she was going to have a baby, you can imagine our emotions ran the spectrum. Eventually, the emotions of fear and anger gave way to happiness, and we were excited. However, her fiancé soon left for boot camp, and the task of caring for my daughter while she was pregnant fell to me. She had a high-risk pregnancy and required many, 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 many trips to Akron Children's Hospital, and through all of those, I was the one to take her and be by her side. I was also by her side when my granddaughter Ava was born with many complications and who was very, very ill. My granddaughter's first home was my home. My daughter still lived with me. Her fiancé, Caleb, was now deployed in Cuba for a year, so I knew that they would be there for a long time. And as I suspected, my daughter was not ready to be a mother. So the task of mothering this small, very ill, needy child fell to me. So I raised her happily for the first 17 months of her life. I took her to all her doctor's appointments, and I did everything that a traditional mother would do for their child. When Caleb came back from Cuba, they decided, as could be expected, that because he was being stationed in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, they would all go and live together, which I knew in my head would happen, but my heart kept denying it. Because as much as it was difficult in my late 30s and early 40s to raise a grandchild, I didn't want her to leave. So saying goodbye was really hard, and the first 3 months that they were gone, I can look back now and realize that I was in a terrible depression. And I realized it one day that I needed to break out of this depression because I realized in 3 months I hadn't read a single book. So for me, that was a huge wake-up call. So I started doing other things, and 1 year later, when Caleb was then deployed to Kuwait, they returned. And shortly after Ava and Leanne returned, a second granddaughter, Jade, was born. My daughter still wasn't ready for the responsibility of two children all by herself, so the girls came over to my house every weekend. For a long time, like 2 years. When Caleb finished his service in Fort Leonard Wood and decided not to re-up and decided to come back home to Ohio to be with his daughters, he brought with him a new wife. So that meant the girls that I had been instrumental in raising were now going to have a stepmother. I was angry, I was hurt, I was all over the place in emotions when I realized finally that what I was feeling was fear. I was afraid that these babies were going to be taken away from me. However, it turned out okay, because things always usually turn out okay in the end. I went from having them every weekend to having them every other weekend. I decided to become a commission lay leader candidate. I used my free time for myself, which was a gift. Now we all have a great relationship. Victoria, the stepmother, is a really wonderful person. She takes good care of my granddaughters. And we all work together to ensure that they have what they need, and we just set our personal stuff aside. We are not a Hallmark family. You cannot walk into a store and find a card that says Happy Mother's Day to a grandmother who raised her grandchildren and had to let them go twice and now is struggling to work. I mean, there's just no card for that. But despite that, all of our mothering, mine, Leanne's, Victoria's, is real just the same. I'm sure some of you may have similar experiences in your life. This morning, we are acknowledging Mother's Day with a variety of traditions. We'd like to take a moment to peek underneath and look at the impulses and emotions that inform all of our diverse traditions of Mother's Day. I invite you to take a moment to reflect on an act of mothering that has inspired you. It might be something you witnessed, you experienced from your own mother, or from another person of any relationship or gender in your life who has filled that role for you. It might be something you witnessed, an act of mothering that you saw bless someone else. Once you have such an act in mind, we encourage you to write for just a few words about how good enough mothering has inspired you. You were each given a note card when you came in to the sanctuary this morning. If you don't have one, the ushers will be happy to get you one. On that note card, will you please write your words of inspiration about mothering? Today is our traditional flower ceremony, and each of you brought a flower to share with the congregation. If you did not, there are extras to share if you would like to. Now I would like to invite you to bring your flowers forward. If this side of the sanctuary could come around this way to the front, and this side around that way to the front, bring your cards and your flowers. Melissa and I will collect the cards, and feel free to make lovely bouquets in the front.
We'll be sharing just a few of these, your words, later in the service, and we'll have all of your words on display downstairs during the social hour if you'd like to see what everybody wrote.
Our story this morning is one that I've told many times, but tradition calls on us to tell and retell those stories that are important to our community. Just as the Nativity story is told at Christmas time every year, and the Exodus story is told at every Passover Seder, it is important that we as Unitarian Universalists tell our own story of the origins of the flower ceremony, because it is singularly our own story. So in the land of Czechoslovakia, almost 100 years ago, there was a church, but the building did not look much like a church. It had no bells, no stained glass windows, it had no piano, it didn't have a chalice, it had no flowers. But the church did have some things. It had four walls and a ceiling and a floor, and it had a door and a few windows and hard wooden chairs. But that was all. It was plain and simple. Except the church also had people who came to it every Sunday, lots of people, and it had a minister whose name was Norbert Chopek. And every Sunday, Minister Chopek spoke to the people while they listened, sitting quietly and still in those hard wooden chairs. And when he was done speaking, the people talked a little bit among themselves, and then they all went home. And that was it. No music, no religious education classes, no art in the fellowship hall, no gluten-free muffins, and no coffee. Springtime came to the city, and Norbert Chopek went out for a stroll. The rains had come and the birds were singing and the flowers were blooming all over. The world was beautiful. Then an idea came to him, simple and clear, plain as day. The next Sunday, he asked all the people in the church to bring a flower or a budding branch or even a twig, and each person was to bring one. What kind, they asked. What color? What size? You choose, he said. Each of you choose what you like. And so on the next Sunday, the people came with flowers of all different colors and sizes and kinds. There were yellow daisies, red roses, white lilies, blue asters, pansies, and just green leaves, pink and purple and gold. There were all of those colors and more. Flowers filled all the vases, and the church wasn't so plain and simple anymore. And Minister Chopik spoke to the people while they listened, sitting quiet and still in those hard wooden chairs. These flowers, he said, are like ourselves, different colors, different shapes, and different sizes, each needing different kinds of care, but each beautiful, each important and special in its own way. And when he was done speaking, they each chose a different flower from the vases before they went home. And that was all. It was beautiful, plain, and simple. The flower celebration that we are doing today has taken place all over the world in Unitarian Universalist churches since 1923. Norbert Chopik started this ritual to celebrate the beauty of our faith and the people in it. In each flower, Chopik saw hope for humanity, even though he would later die because of his beliefs. So let us remember him and his principles and his dreams. Later in the service, the adults will be receiving flowers that they'll take with them. And then when the children leave the sanctuary in just a few moments, the teachers and I will take a vase of flowers to the classroom so that they can be distributed to the children later. So even though we are all different and beautiful in our own ways, we gather as one in love and community.
Today, our culture celebrates Mother's Day, and we want to acknowledge that not everybody feels like celebrating. Some have had mothering that wasn't good enough, and some have had mothers who were abusive. We honor and pray for them for healing. Some are consumed by loss this year, for their mothers are gone now. We honor that pain and pray for peace. Some are consumed with grief this year as their experience of mothering has been forever changed by sorrow and loss. We honor that sorrow and pray for comfort. Some are consumed with emptiness this year as they long to bring children into their lives forever. We honor that ache and pray for patience. Mother's Day isn't bright and easy for everyone, and so we honor the diversity of our experience. We also celebrate the impulse behind this tradition. We celebrate the gift of mothering, given by many people in many different forms. These are your words and the words of the children of our congregation about how mothering has inspired you.
My mom supports my interests, even though she might not share them.
My mother bought me a purple coat. Since then, I've always loved purple.
Raising a child after losing a child born the year before.
Offering unconditional love and sympathy to a teenager when you sometimes want to laugh.
My mommy loves me and cares for me. She has loved me for 7 long years since I was adopted.
Grandma reading to me on the couch, loved, cared for. Grandma catching toads and butterflies, loved, adored, held, and valued.
They love their children more than anything.
To a mother who had to place me from her for a while, then retrieve me and raise me with love and care.
My stepmother's mother treated every grandchild, whether by blood or remarriage, with the same abundant love and generosity. The older I get, the more I appreciate this.
Breastfeeding in public.
My mom, who loves me no matter what, accepts me, sees my potential, and shares life's struggles and joys with me. She is present.
She brought her children across the ocean to escape a war.
My mother, who was the most unselfish human being, putting everyone else's needs first, and she cooked homemade meals every day, hung sheets on the outside clothesline, sewed clothing for us using original ideas.
My mother-in-law has become my true mother. She loves me unconditionally.
She helps me clean my room.
When my mom rinsed an eyelash out of my eye during our Mother's Day walk,
she forgot to teach me the word impossible.
Mothering means unconditional love that is never ending. With the words of these affirmations of mothering in our hearts and in our minds, we'll keep silence for a few moments together. To join me now in a blessing. We offer our blessings upon all the people who find a way to give the gift of good enough mothering. Blessings upon birth mothers who love in the best ways they know how. Blessings upon stepmothers who find a way to help love grow. Blessing upon mothers-in-law who welcome more love. Blessings upon foster mothers who love without promise. Blessings upon adoptive mothers who love beyond biology. Blessings upon grandmothers who love across generations. Blessings upon aunts and sisters and cousins who create a web of love. Blessings upon fathers and brothers and uncles who nurture with love. Blessings upon teachers and coaches and mentors who widen the web of love. And finally, blessings upon all of those unnamed who have inspired us with their mothering. It happens in so many diverse ways. Love comes in many colors. We lift our hearts in thanks and in praise for the gift.
Evidence by Mary Oliver. Where do I live? If I had no address, as many people do not, I could nevertheless say that I lived in the same town as the lilies of the field and the still waters. Spring, and all through the neighborhood now there are strong men tending flowers. Beauty without purpose is beauty without virtue. But all beautiful things inherently have this function: to excite the viewers toward sublime thought. Glory to the world, that good teacher. Among the swans, there is none called the least or the greatest. I believe in kindness, also in mischief, also in singing, especially when singing is not necessarily prescribed. As for the body, it is solid and strong and curious and full of detail. It wants to polish itself. It wants to love another body. It is the only vessel in the world that can hold, in a mix of power and sweetness, words, song, gesture,
passion, ideas, ingenuity, devotion, merriment, vanity, and virtue. Keep some room in your heart for the unimaginable.
I've been thinking about the history of Mother's Day. You probably know that it was started in the 1870s by Julia Ward Howe, who was an abolitionist and a peace activist and had a vision for an international Women's Council Day of Peace. She was inspired to stand up against war and the brutality of sons and fathers and husbands losing their lives in war. And she had some limited success locally where she lived, but it didn't really catch on nationally. And then in the early 1900s, a woman named Anna Jarvis had the idea. I don't know if she knew about Julia Ward Howe or not, but she had the idea for a Mother's Day celebration. And her inspiration was her own mother, who had died and who she was very close to. Anna Jarvis had no children, so her vision was totally focused on honoring mothers. And she wanted it to be a holy day, a day of sentiment. So she introduced this with services in her congregation, and that took off quickly. She chose the second Sunday in May. We still keep Mother's Day then, and she chose the white carnation as a symbol. Well, florist retailers quickly saw some opportunities here, and they began raising the prices of carnations, white carnations, in May, and she was furious because she didn't want this to be about things or profit. She wanted it to be about honoring and loving mothers. And so she protested. She was quite a protester. She protested the florists in the town where she lived when they raised the rates. She went to the National Confectioners, the Candy Makers Conference, and held a boycott there because she didn't want them making candies specifically for Mother's Day. And she railed against the advent of the greeting card for Mother's Day, saying that it was for people who were too lazy to write letters. She would have been, in fact, she got involved in 33 lawsuits over the years about other people trying to, like, she wanted to copyright Mother's Day. In fact, she tried to. She said it was her intellectual property, and she sued people who tried to have a different vision of what Mother's Day would be about. So she would be horrified to find out that Mother's Day is the fourth largest consumer holiday in the United States today. No, the third, sorry. The December holidays are first, and then back to school shopping, and then Mother's Day. Valentine's Day is fourth. $21 billion people spend on Mother's Day this year. So she would have been quite distressed, and there are many people who are distressed by the commercialization of all of our holidays. Not only that, there are a lot of people who are distressed by the idealization of motherhood. That's been going on for some time. So in recent years, there have been a lot of people who are trying to reimagine what Mother's Day is about. And there are some folks who are reaching back to that history and saying, Julia Ward Howe had this vision, and this is what Mother's Day should be about. And in fact, there was this big march in D.C. yesterday, the Million Moms March, led by people associated with the Black Lives Matter movement who are trying to name Julia Ward Howe's vision as their vision for what Mother's Day is about in this time of racism and police brutality that we're seeing. And there are other people who have started, there's a whole greeting card line called Mama's Day, which is about widening the vision of Mother's Day and centering it from just a birth mother and including all the people who mother and different genders of people who mother. So there's this contest going on, it seems to me, and maybe it's still on the fringes, not in the mainstream. $21 billion is a lot of money. And I clicked last night buying my mom a little gift certificate for a massage, so I participate too. But on the margins, it seems like there's this contest of people saying, we don't want Mother's Day to just be about buying things. We want it to have more meaning than that, and trying to find ways to do that. And we all kind of try to find ways to do that in our own way. So I've been thinking about all this because it's about tradition. There's this tradition of Mother's Day, and we participate in it. And we find our own ways to do that. And the reason we do is because it's one of those days that we just, it's hard to ignore. You can't really just ignore Mother's Day, right? It's happening all around us. So individuals find a way to engage the tradition in a way that has some meaning for them, and congregations have to do that too. Churches can't really ignore Mother's Day. There has to be some way, however small, to note the meanings that we make and the feelings that we bring with us into worship, because though they're invisible, they're here. And we have to name that, honor that, and acknowledge that. So we do. We find a way to mark this day, and we do this with so many holidays, cultural holidays and religious holidays too. But the interesting thing about Unitarian Universalism is that our liturgical year, the holidays that we celebrate throughout the year, all of them are other people's. They're the cultures or they're other religious traditions, except one, this one. This is the only tradition that is uniquely Unitarian Universalist. The purpose of the flower ceremony, as Reverend Norbert Chopuck conceived it, was to create a ritual experience of one from many. He wanted to find a liturgical way to help people understand how each individual's experience is an important part of the community experience, and the ways that the diverse individuals that make up a community make the community more beautiful, just like the diverse flowers make the bouquets more beautiful. The exchange of flowers at the end of the ceremony is meant to symbolize our bonds with one another. We take the flower as a symbol of the bonds, the connections that we have with the other individuals who make up the community. And the flower is a symbol of our belief that each and every person in the community is important and worthy of our time and attention. Though he created this ceremony in 1923, we didn't learn about it in the United States until the 1940s when his wife Maja was here during World War II. She was here to educate and advocate in the United States, and she introduced this flower ceremony at the Unitarian congregation in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and it quickly spread like wildflower, and now almost all Unitarian Universalist congregations keep this ceremony sometime in the spring. And we do it for its history. We do it because it's ours. It is a Unitarian Universalist tradition. We do it because it reminds us of our international connections with Unitarian Universalists around the world, and we do it for the elegance of the ritual and its simple beauty. Community is a key part of why so many people seek out Unitarian Universalist congregations. When we do surveys or other Unitarian Universalist congregations do surveys about what brings people and what keeps them, community is always at the top of the list. People say that that's really important. And some people would even say it's the centerpiece of our reason for being a congregation. And increasingly, still on the margins, kind of like the margins of the people who are trying to create new meanings for Mother's Day, there are some people who are within Unitarian Universalism and in other religious traditions as well who are saying community is an insufficient reason for being. Not only that, some are saying if we don't find a larger purpose than community, then our time as religious traditions in this societal landscape where we live now is limited. There's a Presbyterian missionary named Scott Dannemiller who wrote an essay recently that's been getting a lot of traffic online. And he noted that he's writing for a Christian context, and he noted that Christian congregations have really learned a lot about welcoming over the years, generations, and that most Christian congregations, if they put some effort into it, can really excel at welcoming people, welcoming guests. But he says that focus on developing the skill of welcoming guests has had unintended consequences. He says when newcomers are welcomed as guests, it can make it very difficult for them to make the transition from guest to member of the community. He says that the reason this happens is because we get overly focused on tending our spiritual home and nurturing our religious family, and we are happy to welcome people as guests, but that it can be hard for us to make room to make the home bigger, to make the family wider, to let those people who have been guests become part of the community. So it ends up creating barriers to inclusion, he says, which is certainly not what we intended. And not only that, he says that the focus on serving ourselves, nurturing our community and tending our spiritual home, strikes people unaffiliated, which is so many people these days, unaffiliated, but maybe curious and therefore willing to stop in and be a guest. It strikes them, he says, as narrow and self-serving. Our purpose, he says, shouldn't be about serving our community, but about serving others. Tom Shade has made similar arguments. He's a Unitarian Universalist, and he is a He's a kind of public theologian for us who keeps this wonderful blog called The Lively Tradition. And he has had a series of posts recently critiquing our focus on community and envisioning other ways, other centerpieces around which we could cohere rather than the building up and maintaining of the community. He says that maintaining community has intrinsic value, but he questions whether it's sufficient to make it the center of our mission and vision. He says there are lots of people, those unaffiliated people, who don't have any interest in being part of religious community these days, and our mission should learn how to be, to bring these values that we have, these liberal religious values, out into the world rather than nurturing them here and hoping that people come in and have a chance to be exposed to them. He says liberal religious values can help humanize the culture if we're willing to live them in the public square, not just in our churches. So this thinking is behind the missional movement that I've been telling you a little bit about in the last year or so. Many of the missional leaders say that the focus on community is too small and narrow, and we should be finding ways to use our love and energy and resources, as it says on one of the very popular T-shirts that the folks in the missional movement wear. It says, love the hell out of the world. And they mean that literally, like be out in the world and enact your love in public and don't keep it confined to your congregation. So I'm really drawn to this vision, which is why I've been learning about it and telling you about it. I'm inspired by the kinds of things that they're doing, which basically involves serving people who are underserved. And there are lots of people who are underserved in many, many ways that this is happening. And at the same time, as I'm inspired by this vision and this movement, I also really love the experience of community that we've been focused on creating and nurturing in congregational life. That's why I'm a parish minister. I think that this is a good thing, a beautiful thing, a healthy thing. And though I understand the arguments against too much of an emphasis on nurturing community, I'm also not totally persuaded that we should abandon our emphasis on community and be completely out in the world, because I think community has a lot to offer people who are hurting, people who are lonely, people who are stressed out, overworked, overwhelmed. And I think community is a balm for those kinds of troubles. There are a lot of people who are living lives that are stressed in those kinds of ways who would benefit, I think, if they had more community, healthy community in their lives. And so I want us to be a place that people can find that. Thinking about the way that the traditions of Mother's Day has changed has led me to think about how this ceremony would change if we were to take this argument seriously, this idea that we should be maybe not abandoning community entirely, but finding another center of our mission rather than the community that we create here. And so I was thinking about how the end of this ritual as it stands now is we all take a flower with us when we leave, and I'll invite you to do that at the end of the service as a reminder of your place in this beloved community. And we'll do that because I believe that that good news is worth enacting, that you're all precious and you all belong here, and we're so glad you're here. And this flower that someone else brought is a reminder that you are worthy and we want you here. But what if the ritual had one more part? What if instead of stopping there and we take our flower home and put it on the table or whatever you do with it, we said, go out today and find someone else that you don't know to give this flower to? And you might say, I got this at church, and my job is to give it to someone else as a reminder that we're all connected in one human family. I see you, and I honor your worth, and I wish for you health and beauty and wholeness, and give them the flower. And of course, you'd find your own words to say that, but the point would be to ritualize, to take the ritual out into the world, not have it end here in our congregation, but to take the ritual of this flower ceremony out into the world and to include people in it who are not a part of this community and who will never be a part of this community. I wonder how it would change the meaning of the ceremony if we did something like that. So if you're feeling bold enough to approach a stranger today, you might consider this an invitation to see what happens, to see how it feels to you, to see how the other person responds. And then tell me what you find if you try it. I'm just imagining little changes, wondering about this and wondering about how Unitarian Universalism needs to change in order to respond to the world that we live in today. We have some beautiful and powerful traditions. Which are the ones that will last for the next century? And which are the ones that we need to change lest we become stuck in the past? We're planning now for this congregation's 150th anniversary, so it's a good time for us to reconsider what our religious tradition has to offer and how it might change and grow to meet the needs of the next generation. We're here for ourselves, yes, but we're also here because we care beyond ourselves. We are here because of love, and love always finds a way to reach out. So let us find a way. Amen. We have gathered dedicated to the proposition that beneath all of our diversity, there lies a unity which binds us one to the other, to the earth and to the stars. We've gathered in witness. Let us take our witness out into the world. Go in peace.